Connecting the city and surrounding villages. You've found Cambridge 105.
What sparked your passion for cooking?
I have a good appetite and I eat.
I'll often make subtle changes to the next batch of it.
As long as it has room to move around, it's classified as free range.
So my mother gave me a crash course in cookery when I was 16.
I remember sampling this amazing drink, thinking how I've never tasted coffee this good.
Which homemade desserts can be cheaper than shop-bought alternatives?
We want people to feel at home.
Hello and welcome to Flavour. We are here live in our Guido Street studio, bringing you up to date with the Cambridge food and drink scene. Thanks, of course, to Brian O'Reilly for the last 2 hours. I'm Matt Bentman.
I'm Ruth Reyes, returning after my month off. Thanks to Gigi Perry for standing in for me.
And I'm Alan Alder. Today's programme includes blending tea, buying fish, getting advice, making mistakes, wines of the month, Christmas food, one restaurant and a cafe. There's food and drink news from the university and the city too.
I like a nice cup of tea in the morning for to start the day, you see. And at 11:30, well, my idea of heaven is a nice cup of tea.
Oh, yes. So first, we start the day with a cup of tea, and let's begin the programme with one as well. A new company, Strange Ways Road Tea, started by Fred and Linda, is selling tea from its base in Cambridge. And Ruth was invited to talk to Fred about tea.
So we started off with 7 teas, one of which is our hand-blended breakfast blend, and we're hoping to add more in as time goes on.
Amazing. So tell us more about the hand-blended breakfast blend. How do you do that?
There's a lot of work that goes into creating these blends. We've made very good friends with, I think we had about 15, 16 teas to narrow down, and we ended up with 4. 2 Chinese, the Assam as a base, and then this other Kenyan one, which adds that sort of breakfasty taste. And then we drank a lot of tea over a lot of days and came up with it, and we were very happy with it. And the most difficult thing was making one that worked well without milk and with milk, because it's very easy to have one that works nice without milk, but we want to appeal to ordinary tea drinkers and give them something special, and so it's quite a challenge, but as long as you add a little bit more and brew it a bit longer, it's great. So that's what we recommend everyone to do with that breakfast one.
So tell us a bit more about the flavours in the breakfast tea.
What we wanted from a breakfast tea, we did a lot of reading about it, just because the actual blend has changed over time. It was actually from someone who originally was English but lived in America, and he brought it to America based on the teas that were available to him. What we really wanted it to fulfill in terms of sort of being a traditional breakfast tea is one of the things that has to be quite sharp in a way, quite citrusy, because it has to be able to cut through the greasiness of a full English breakfast. So we wanted something that's going to go with a full English breakfast. And that's brought in by it's Chinese cumin tea. So that's one of the things that we're really keen on getting in there. So we made sure we had enough of that to bring out that flavour. And then we also wanted it to have that sort of breakfasty, almost savoury flavour, which is so traditional, and that's what it needs. So with that, you get this Kenyan tea, and that's got a much richer flavour. But then we also wanted it to be very full-bodied. And so for that, we use an Assam base. And then with Assam in the tea, it adds a much bigger hit to it. So it just fills out the tea a lot more. And that's what helps it go with milk a lot better than just having a nice black tea.
So tell us more about your other teas. So you said you had 7 teas that you're selling.
Yeah, so we've got 2 greens, because we couldn't decide which one to take. We've got a Japanese sencha, which is actually grown in China, but it's steamed and rolled to the traditional Japanese method. But they, sadly, after the tsunami, they could no longer grow. It washed away all the tea plantations, and so they had to ship all their manufacturing and production over to China. So still a Japanese sencha, it's still the same, it's the same plant as all tea, and it's still done the same method, but it's not. We've also got one called Pinhead Gunpowder Green, which is a really strong, very traditional Chinese one. So you've got, with those two, you've got a choice. If you like a light green grassy sort of tea, then you've got the sencha, and if you like a stronger one with a bit more punch, then you've got the gunpowder. Then we've got a Darjeeling and a Ceylon tea. So the Darjeeling is a Mim Darjeeling. We had to have it because it's the champagne of teas, and we couldn't call ourselves a reputable tea business if we didn't have a Darjeeling. And we've also got Lover's Leap Ceylon, which is a very nice sort of light tea, which is sort of one of our favourite very mellow teas. It's a nice relaxing one. Then we've got Pu'er tea. My partner Linda, she travelled a lot in China, and Pu'er is the standard thing to have when you're in China. It's what the Chinese call black tea, whereas they call what we'd call black tea red tea. It's really black in the cup. It almost looks like coffee. It's a fermented tea. Ours is only a young Pu'er, so it's only fermented for a year. But it's very strong, very earthy. It's an acquired taste. She loves it. I'm okay with it. And a lot of people will smell it once and won't like it. But for people that love it, it's one of the nicest ones. So I completely defer to her judgment on that one. We've got Iron Goddess Oolong, which is my favourite tea ever. I've had people over, and when we were still sampling, I said, oh, why don't you try this? And they absolutely loved this. And I thought, we can't not have it. And I was so glad that everyone else liked it. It's sort of very floral, citrusy, really light, but it's got characteristics of green and black teas because it's sort of halfway on its way towards being a black tea. It's very, very special, and it's sort of one of my favourites, so I'd recommend it to anyone. That's my top one of our range, but then obviously the breakfast blend is something special that we're actually making, so obviously our heart's more in that one.
It's very exciting. So on the packaging, it tells you the water temperature and how long to brew. Is that something you've tested out those then?
Really, as a rule, you have black tea at 100 degrees C because it's fully oxidised. So what makes it black is oxidising it, not just drying it. And whereas green teas aren't oxidised at all, so you need to have a lower temperature of water. Otherwise, you break down some of the things that make them taste so good in there. So that's why we say about 80 to 90 degrees in the water. Really, if you just boil your kettle and then leave it with the top open for a minute or two, you're about there. Oolong, again, because it's halfway in between, it wants about 90 to 95 degrees just to, again, sort of bring out the flavour without destroying anything that's sort of not oxidised.
So where did you get all your tea knowledge? Why a tea company?
Well, we just really like tea, and we thought it would be good fun to sort of bring that to Cambridge. We had a little look around, and there are a lot of sort of fairly big trendy tea companies, but there's no one that we found really doing sort of just these little batch blends, hand blended stuff, which is why we're so keen on doing more of it. So we're experimenting with this one, but that's definitely a thing we want to grow. But mostly it's just for fun, because we like it, and we're hoping after we got into loose leaf tea we realised how good it was, how it compared to sort of ordinary bag tea. We wanted to encourage more people to get into it, and I think for those people that have been introduced to it so far and have tried it, I think they're quite surprised by how different it can be.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Fred. It's been lovely chatting with you.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
And that was Fred from Strangeways Road Tea Company. You can get their teas by mail order from their website, strangewaysroad.co.uk. And I've tried the breakfast blend, and honestly, it was so tasty. And it's good luck to them.
Yeah, you can never have enough tea in the world. But on now to fish. Alan?
Yes, I don't think you can have enough fish either. People sometimes ask on Twitter where you can buy fish in Cambridge other than from supermarkets. Well, there's the market from Wednesdays to Sundays. There's the Sea Tree in Mill Road. And there's a wet fish counter in the Loch Fine restaurant in Trumpington Street. There's a fish van by the Portland Arms pub in Chesterton Road. And there's also one from 8:30 to 12 noon on Saturday mornings in Grantchester Street, Newnham, near the junction with Eltersley Avenue. It's run by Ben Roberts from Grimsby. And I spoke with him last Saturday after buying some fish.
Which are the most popular fish, would you say?
The most popular fish for me are the salmon. They're the biggest seller and have been for many years since the development of the fishing and farming industry for the salmon in Norway and Scotland been more accessible for most people, whereas in the past it was a luxury. Whitefish-wise, it's the haddock and the plaice, and more so now the cod's coming back.
Did people sort of take notice of the worries about...
Yeah, very much so. The lack of quota as well has made a big difference, whereas there's not as much fish around for people to buy, so it's been harder to get hold of, so the price has gone up and up, which has made a big difference. Yeah. But now we've the quotas are such that we can catch a bit more, and the price is coming down, and more people are turning back to cod.
Well, I wonder how adventurous people are in the fish eating, because you sell things which I'd certainly not come across before, like witches and tusk.
Yes, it's they've obviously been around for a long, long time. It's just that people change the names of things to make them sound better, whereas witches, a lot of people sell as Torbay Sole to make them sound a bit more, you know, upmarket. And things like Megrim are called Sand Sole and things like that, and the Tusk and the Ling. But they've been, always been around, obviously, for a long, long time, but it's just with favours going towards the what we'd call as prime fish, such as the cod and the haddock and the lemon sole and the halibut and the things like that, where the cheaper fish always ended up in the fish cakes and the fish fingers factories and the pet food because they didn't get the money for them.
But things like witches are really nice fish.
They are, yeah.
There
are
times, Megrim, yeah, which is popular in France, I think.
It is, yeah, very much so. Yeah, they love them over there.
But here it's one of the cheaper...
It is, yeah, and taste will change, I'm sure. It's just getting people educated to know that these fish are available and how nice they are.
Are there any other great unknowns?
Yeah, I think there are. There's lots of fish that we don't see hardly any use of. And the little whitings, the pout whitings, which are little fat whitings, little round ones, they're delicious, but the price of them went through the floor and they stopped catching them. You know, they went into the byproducts. Yeah. So the people don't want them, but they don't realise how nice they are.
Well, with the sea sort of gradually warming up, is that making a difference? Are there more fish that maybe...
There are different varieties now that hake is more prevalent these days. Whereas hake used to be seasonal and we used to get it a lot further south. We get a lot of hake now in Scotland and further up in the North Sea, whereas it used to be a lot further south of the English Channel and that sort of area where you'd get most of the hake. Summertime, you'd get some further up the North Sea, but not so much. But it's changing, and we're getting more lemon sole around again now, and more Dover sole, and more skate as well is coming back, which is good. Especially now the weather's getting colder and the water's getting colder this time of year, it makes a big difference.
Yeah. Why is it that people say when the water's colder, the fish tastes better? Is that true?
It is true, especially for white fish such as cod and haddock. In the spring, when they've finished breeding, the flesh is sometimes watery because they've not eaten anything because they've gone through the breeding process. And then you get into summer when they start feeding, they put on a lot of weight, but the meat isn't as firm as it is. As soon as the water gets colder, the meat starts to firm up. And it's not as watery. Yeah. So, and it lasts like that until February time when they start get breeding again and we go through the cycle again.
And where do you get the fish from?
Well, I live in Grimsby, which is 2.5 hours north of Cambridge, really. And I've lived all my life, I'm from a fishing family. And the fish comes to Grimsby from all over the world, not just in the country. We get fish from the Far East, it's flown to Heathrow and then driven straight to us within a day of it being caught. So it comes from everywhere now. It's a global industry, whereas before it was the boats you had locally was the only fish you could really get. But now it comes from everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I buy all the fish that I sell in the van myself, and I do everything. I fillet it myself and take it to the smokehouse and have it smoked, and everything. It's all done by me.
Right. It's always tastes to me very fresh.
It is. I pride myself on it being as fresh as you can possibly get it, rather than going out, you're catching it yourself. you know, there's not much you can do to get it any fresher. It's the fish I buy, it'll be what I've bought on the market on the Friday that I've filleted or somebody else has come and finished off for me. It's all as fresh can be.
And when are you in Newnham?
I'm in Newnham on a Saturday morning from 8:30 until at least 12 o'clock. It's usually about 12 by the time I'm done, but it's every Saturday and has been for the last 8 years since I took over from the previous fishman, and hope to be doing it for a lot longer.
Yeah. And do you sell anywhere else in Cambridge?
I'm in Cambridge door to door on a Friday. I start in Girton and I'm sort of round and about Girton and then through to Newnham and then back through and out to Oakington and then on my way home.
Right, so and that's people who have ordered?
It's basically door to door. It's not ordered, but it's people know that I'm coming. But they can contact me and I can go to them, but it's a regular round.
So how do people contact you?
I've got my mobile phone is the best way to do it, which is 077-09-553-888.
So how do your prices compare with the supermarkets?
Well, I'm cheaper on some things and dearer on others. Well, but the supermarket, the problem they've got is the jack of all trades and master of none. They never get fish anywhere near as fresh as I do, and the majority of it's frozen. And it drives me mad that if you go up there and it's got fresh fish, and it's 3/4 of it's frozen fish.
Right.
And it is, and I've known fish all my life, and I can go up and tell you where it was caught and when it was caught and how it was caught and when it was frozen and who defrosted it, because I know the factory that defrosts it and fillets it drives me potty because they class it as fresh fish and it isn't.
Yeah.
And it's misleading people, because they'll go and buy some and think, oh, it's fresh, I'll put it in the freezer, I don't need it this week. And then when they take it out, it's not very good, you know.
Yeah.
It's because it's been frozen twice.
Yeah.
You know, it won't hurt you physically, but it just ruins the fish because it's drying out each time it's frozen. Nearly all of them have it. They can't possibly get fresh fish for all of the supermarkets that in the country every week. It's impossible. There isn't enough. We haven't got a fishing industry that will cope with it. So they have to have frozen fish, and they get it from all over the world and defrost it and do it that way. It's the only way they can cover it.
Is there a fish that you really like that you think hasn't really taken on yet and you wonder why?
One of my personal favourites is rockfish, which is a really, really nice fish. It's also called a sea wolf.
Is it what people used to call rock salmon?
No, rock salmon is
dogfish.
That's a huss, yeah. That's a different fish. It's rock eel, I think they used to call it. But it's a white fish. It lives on shellfish. It's got a big head, and it crunches up shellfish, and really, really tasty fish. It's softer flesh, but it holds together. But the flavour of a lemon sole, but the thickness of like cod and haddock, and it's really nice.
And what's it called again?
It's rockfish, or sea wolf. I think you'll see it on most fishing charts that it comes out.
Right, I'll look out for it.
Yeah.
Okay,
thanks
very much, Ben.
And that was Ben Roberts. I'll have to look out for rockfish or sea wolf. Ben Roberts is in Grantchester Street in Newnham on Saturday mornings.
And I can recommend the quality of the fish Ben sells.
Right, Jackie Bond here, inviting you to join me on Let the Good Times Roll every other Monday. We start rocking at 7 o'clock and we're still rolling at 8 o'clock. Yes, we're playing that great classic rock and roll from the 1950s. We play sound bites from the artists and we play some great rock and roll that's being produced today. So I hope you can join me, Let the Good Times Roll, on Community Radio in your city, Cambridge 105.
Yes, you're listening to Flavour. Still to come, Christmas food, an authentic Italian eatery, and wines of the month. First, though, our special correspondent Pina Broccoli-Anaya has been out and about for another in our regular series of On the Menu.
I'm at Espresso Library on East Row, talking with founder John William Goh. So you've recently decided to stay open till 11 p.m. Mondays to Saturdays, and now you offer an after-hours food and drink menu. We're here right now and the lights are dim and there's usually a jazz soundtrack playing. It's quite chilled out. You've got a really nice cocktail menu and you've recently introduced some little nibbles.
Yeah, well, the evening menu starts at 6. Recently, we were given an award for best cafe in the city, which
is
really
congratulations.
Nice.
Congratulations, Cambridge News Award.
Thank you. Yeah. And when we got given the award, we met some people who got the award for best food producer, which was the Cedric Charcuterie.
Yeah, and they're just based right outside Cambridge.
Absolutely. We sell their meats and also some local cheeses.
So you have like the charcuterie platter, one of the options, and you have a rosemary and garlic saucisson, smoked coppa and fennel lomo, which is different slices of parts of the pig, and Cambridgeshire ham, which sounds really good. Got organic sourdough bread, olive oil, balsamic vinegar. Is your bread from a local supplier?
Yeah, we get all our bread from the Norfolk Street Bakery.
Norfolk Street Bakery, yes. Excellent.
Yeah,
bread.
And then we've got my favourite on the menu at the moment, is the sobrasada, which is spreadable sausage.
So you've got the local cheeses as well, which is a really nice platter to enjoy with your cocktails and your drinks. I see you've got stuff from Norfolk and Suffolk.
Yeah, we got a Norfolk Dapple, which is a hard cheese. My favourite, which is Binham Blue, which is from Norfolk. We've also got Wobbly Bottom. I'm not going to comment on
that. Yeah. Wobbly Bottom Farm. You've got a Baron Bigod, which I've tried already, from Suffolk. Served with your own quince jelly. You make that yourself?
Yeah, I've got a quince tree in my garden.
So you and Margo make your own quince?
Yeah, well, we also have a bay leaf tree. So when we use bay leaves for our port from our Friday menu, marinated overnight in wine and bay leaves and garlic.
Because I know your emphasis is on really fresh, local, seasonal produce, so can't get any more local than your own backyard or your own garden.
Yeah.
So you have a really nice drinks menu. You've got different types of beers, red wine, white wine, whiskey, vodka. Your gin offering is really interesting. Can you tell us a bit more about what you offer in terms of G&Ts?
G&T is probably my favourite drink. At 6 o'clock in the evening, a lot of my family, we have a family sort of tradition, which is good in some ways, but it's sort of probably bad in others, where at 6 o'clock, everyone stops what they're doing, they reconvene in the living room, and they have a drink.
That's a nice tradition.
Basically, I grew up drinking gin and tonics, and I feel that my recipe for them is pretty lovely, actually.
It really is, I have to say. And the fact that you add this seasonal fresh fruit, you get blueberries in there and strawberries and lemon, and it's just really nice.
The primary colours. Yeah. Nice.
It's not just beautiful, but it tastes really good. And you have a choice of four gins that people can choose for now.
Currently, we have a Bombay Sapphire as our house gin. Then we've got a Hendrix, a Tanqueray 10, and then, I don't know if it's been on the programme, but Cambridge Gin, which is a new distillery in Cambridge. Yeah.
And it's an excellent gin as well.
Yes, yeah, really super nice.
So then you can upgrade to a Fever Tree tonic. Is that how it works?
So Fever Tree tonic is our standard tonic.
Oh, okay.
Creamy tonic water.
And they have the natural quinine, which I find better and than the artificial one. And
oh, definitely, definitely. It's, that's why I wanted to have it as my house tonic water. But we also offer another type of tonic called John's Premium Tonic. And the John is not referring to me. It's a man in Arizona. Basically, I'm importing this tonic water from the States.
Yeah.
It's not actually tonic water, it's a tonic syrup, and you mix it with sparkling water to become tonic water, but it's actually a genuine tonic. It's totally different
taste experience. It is, I've tried it, and it looks different as well.
And what I tell my customers, if they really, really fancy a gin and tonic, I wouldn't suggest that they have it. I suggest they have it when they're in the mood for something really special.
Yeah, because it really is something special, I have to say.
Yeah, and it totally doesn't look like a gin and tonic. It looks like tea.
Yeah.
It's just genuinely lovely. When I say that it's a real tonic, as opposed to a fake tonic, if you take, say, a Schweppes, for example, what that really is water, tap water from the Coca-Cola company, sucrose in its pure form, and, as you say, the artificially extracted pure chemical of quinine.
Yeah.
And that is what we are told is tonic water now.
Yeah.
But really, it's just artificial processed drink, whereas the John's Premium Tonic that we sell here is totally not. And then the other drink that really shows that what we do and what we will continue to do in the future when I expand the menu is our Candy Bellini. So if you ever bought a Bellini before in a cocktail bar, what basically that is a mango puree mixed with Prosecco. But those mangoes would have been pureed years ago. The barman is basically using a cheat puree squeezy thing to get the puree into the glass. Whereas at Espresso Library, we make our juices and smoothies fresh every day. So we have our candy smoothie, which
is one of my favorites.
we will have made a couple of hours previously in the cafe. So it will have been made fresh that day.
And it's delicious. It has like a mango and banana, raspberries,
Orange
juice, vanilla. So when I heard candy Bellini, I was like, what is this? I never heard of it. And then I was really pleased to find that it was based on that, and you just add the Prosecco, and it's a really, really nice drink.
I am really pleased about being able to offer fresh ingredients all the time, and I never really want that ethos to change.
Yeah.
I'd almost rather just put the price up and get no customers. You know?
There will be a niche. There will be people like me, foodies, that want to try something very different, that appreciate that it's not just a mass-produced Bellini frozen thing, that it's like freshly made and it's part of your own recipe that you've done yourself. So.
Yeah, so in Cambridge we do have a few bar options. But what you get here is space.
And you get a really interesting environment because you always have rotating art exhibitions. So there's always a different type of ambiance. So right now you've got big abstract paintings by a Cambridge artist called Channy. Yeah. His exhibition's called Paint, and I think that's on until the new year. And so that gives it a whole other vibe. And then you'll have something else completely different that'll give its own ambiance. So it really is a very functional space if you think about it. It's just one big, large room, but you do quite a lot with it.
Yeah, one thing I'm also looking forward to doing in the future soon is getting grand piano. I'll invite
people who can play.
People to play. There are plenty of very, very talented pianists. Yeah. Even if no one comes, I'll come and I'll enjoy myself.
And many thanks to John Gall of Espresso Library, which you can find near the corner of East Road, close to Parker's Peace. For more information, you can check their website, espressolibrary.com.
You're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105.
Espresso Library, like many of the independents in Cambridge, is doing very well, and they all began with a vision and a plan. But what advice were they given? Here are Simon Chaney from Bread and Meat, Joe Krajinska from Afternoon Teas, and Luis Navarro from Nana Mexico.
You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if
succeed at last.
The best advice we were given at the time was really just to not do it.
Don't scrimp on your dishwasher.
Work in foods, feed people, and you'll never go hungry.
Stick with what our vision was.
You've got your mind set on a dream. You can get it. The morning knows it well. You can get it if you read.
Well, good advice, and it worked, but not everything goes swimmingly. There are mistakes too, and sometimes they're outside your control. Here's Joe Krajinska again.
The worst mistake I made was not testing my oven before I had to bake for the opening day. The fit-out had just run right up to the last minute and I just had to get baking. We'd set a date and I wasn't gonna change it. But, you know, that was... Trying to get used to new ovens is not something you want to do overnight.
No. So how did the cakes turn out?
They weren't my best, and the first day was our busiest day for a long time. And it was... I think people were quite forgiving.
And mistakes can happen because you get too much advice and lose focus. Here's Simon Fraser of Hot Numbers.
Everyone has an opinion on something and what would be good to implement in a coffee shop. And wanting to keep everyone happy, you try and do that. And also, you know, staff have opinions of what things should be. Customers have opinions. And you want to sort of keep everyone happy, so you try and do that. But what's wrong with that, really, is the fact you end up doing too much and you forget your original goal and focus, which is, for me, very much the coffee. So if we start to do too much food, etc., then it takes the emphasis off the coffee, which is my main passion. So it's trying to sort of have a balance between all of that, really. So
what you're saying, really, is that your sort of original vision was ultimately the driving force, and that's what kept you going.
Indeed,
the...
yeah, very much so. And you can get too caught up in all the other areas of growing... and forget your focus, and it actually takes emphasis off. So, yeah very much to keep a vision of what that is in your business plan. In fact, rewrite the business plan or make sure you have a good one in place and stick to it and reevaluate it.
Yeah, great. Sometimes, though, the biggest mistakes happen because you're full of adrenaline and the fun of setting up the business. Here are Luis, whose Nana Mexico began as a Cambridge street food van, and Simon Chenny from Bread and Meat again.
The biggest mistake I made is when you have something in your mind and you are quite full of adrenaline and you don't listen to anyone. And a lot of people with a lot of experience and well-intentioned will give you pieces of advice, very important, and I wouldn't listen. I would listen and I just wouldn't take that into consideration. Really, it doesn't enter your head. So yes, my biggest mistake was that I really didn't listen to people properly, and I made so many mistakes initially that really this business is where it is almost miraculously. Main one, when we opened, the first decision to open on the streets, you know, the whole street food concept didn't even exist in this country. I did it because that's what you do in Mexico. For me, it was normal, was second nature. But in here, it was completely different ballgame, you know. In here, you could see the only street food was, you know, the kebabs or the burger vans, you know, well outside in areas where a different kind of thing. And I come into Cambridge City Center trying to do that, and it almost, I mean, it could have cost my life, and it didn't work because, you know, there were lots of problems that arose from them, which I was told in advance, but I didn't listen. Yeah, it should have cost me the business. And it didn't, because of the generosity of many, many people, you know, like my parents-in-law, my parents, my wife, my Mexican friend, George Jimenez, and his dear wife.
We made many mistakes. We entered the business, I think, having, for myself, worked for many, many years for a large corporation. And there's always somebody else that will pick up the pieces, that will deal with the little things. There's always someone to say, what about this? The biggest mistake was not sorting out how the fundamentals of a business and how it runs. Sorting out our finance systems, sorting out our time recording, sorting out our ordering. So those things which seem so obvious that actually we neglected it in the fun of opening a new establishment, the fun of opening doors to customers, we forgot. And which meant we made some fundamental mistakes. Our first payroll run had errors, which obviously for the team was a really big impact for them. And you know, something we should have absolutely realised before we opened.
Right, so you spent a lot of time recovering.
We spent a lot of time recovering, not just the detail, but you know, really making sure that the team felt that we weren't doing something underhand there, that it was really genuinely an oversight and a mistake.
Yeah.
Now that we've got things sorted, you know, we've invested in an online accounting system software, which means we spend a lot of time looking at that and making sure that's right. And that allows the business to run much more smoothly than it did in those first few weeks and months.
And a reminder that Afternoon Teas is in King Street, Nana Mexico is in Regent Street and Petit Curie, and also in a mobile van. Hot Numbers is in Gwydir Street and Trumpington Street. Bread and Meat is in Bennett Street, and the Flavour team can strongly recommend them all to you.
Indeed we can. With a little over a month to Christmas, if we can believe that, and to get us in the mood, Matt popped to a few local independents to see what their plans are for the festive season.
Hi, I'm Gary. I own Mill Road Butchers in Cambridge. We've just taken out all of our Christmas bookings and orders now throughout November and December. So if you're looking for turkeys, geese, ducks, all sorts of wild birds, including pheasants and partridges and pigeons. For Christmas. Yeah, we're selling a lot of pigeons. I think people are seeing what these TV chefs are doing. You know, you've got two great chefs already in Cambridge using pigeon at Alimentum and at Midsummer. So I think it's getting out to the wider public, and they're all wanting to try things, and you know, they're a little bit frightened of it, but once you've had it, I think you wouldn't go back. Yeah, all sorts of game, including venison. We do a lot of venison, a lot of local stuff, a lot of muntjac, rabbits included, wild rabbits and tame rabbits.
That's the most foul, bad-tempered rodent you ever set eyes on.
And pretty much anything else that you need, really, to make Christmas special. Pop down and speak to us, and we'll put you in a Christmas book. You pay a small deposit and everything gets taken care of. So if you'd like to pop in and place your orders with us at any time, right up to about maybe the 15th of December is good. But yeah, we would definitely be having maybe a bit of pigeon or, you know, a partridge or two, if I can sneak it in there and convince my sister that it's chicken.
For Christmas.
46 Chesterton High Street. Here we are at Thirsty. Revolutionary drinking. And Matthew Boucher is here.
Yes, we are going to have a stall at the Mitcham's Corner Christmas Festival. I think we'll have a Christmas light switch on. Thirsty Cambridge will have a stall in the market, and we hopefully will be giving out maybe some mulled wine, and we'll be having our range of wines on display, and of course our famous growlers full of beer, and possibly even wine on tap.
For Christmas.
Hello, I'm Chan from Bridges on Bridge Street, Cambridge. Running up to Christmas, we have a few dishes. So on the first week, we have
some mince pies, gingerbread.
These are the gingerbread biscuits that
The gingerbread biscuits also are much lighter in sugar and also not too chewy. Crunchy, put less ginger in, so it's more children-friendly as well.
We'll be running those throughout the Christmas period. They're really delicious, and Chan's really good at making sure that most of his sweet treats are low sugar.
That's right.
So they're really guilt-free.
Okay, so on the second week, we're gonna do roulade Christmas log, which also has two-thirds of the sugar taken out of the original recipe. Very healthy as a cake.
Now, this is your first attempt at this, Chan, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Even the first time, it turned out really good. It's gluten-free. The original sugar level was 175, so we cut down 75 grams of unnecessary sugar, and it still tastes sweet, so I might cut it down even more.
So it's got a little bit of whipped cream through it, not too much, because you don't like...
That's nice and light. I was expecting it to be a little bit stodgy. It's normally the way when you alter the recipe.
If you put flour in it, it would make it heavier. I just mixed eggs and the egg white separately. Gives it the lightness as well, rather than heavy feeling of flour being in the food. On the third week, we will start doing our festive soups. which might include organic ingredients like beetroot, lentils, broccoli, things to give it colour for the seasonal period. And on the fourth week, we'll be doing our open sandwich. Turkey, sausage, cranberry, and just to give it a bit colour, lovely spinach to keep the healthy. Very yeah. conscious of keeping the body healthy, and also it has to be tasty as well.
Is this the first time you've done this in the run-up to Christmas?
Yes.
Okay, so what was the inspiration for that?
We're trying to think of different ways of promoting the business and really sort of showing people that even at the festive time of year, Chan and Meggie are producing some amazing healthy food. The sweet treats, low sugar, all the fresh produce that they use every day, and that can be used in a very festive way. So we're always really bad at overeating over Christmas, but not if you come to Bridges.
And that was Mill Road Butchers, Thirsty, the wine and coffee shop on Chesterton Road, and Bridges on Bridge Street, letting us know what they've got on for Christmas.
Now, when the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's tradizione. Once again, here is a peanut broccoli and aia. Ciao, Bella.
Ciao, Cambridge. I'm just about to feast on some delicious Italian pizza and pasta here at Tradizione on Mill Road. I'm speaking with one of the owners, Andrea Scaramuccia. Ciao, Andrea.
Ciao, hello, everybody.
So how long has the restaurant been here?
1 year. Next 15th of November will be 1 year.
There's always a lot of people here, especially a lot of Italians, so that's always a good sign when the Italians come for Italian food.
We are quite happy.
So tell us about some of the delicious food you have on your menu.
Basically, we do pasta and pizza with some starters as entree. But we had to decide if we had to do proper Italian with the 3-4 different main courses, like meat, fish.
Like primo piatto.
Or something like pizzeria. In the pizzeria in Italy, you usually eat only pizza. We decided to add a pasta as well, because I think that for the English people, pasta is important. It's an important dish. So we decide to do pizza and pasta. Obviously, we don't do meat or fish because it's a pizza restaurant.
Yeah, a good place to specialize in pasta and pizza.
Yeah, pasta and pizza. Pasta and pizza, obviously, they are all homemade and handmade. Every ingredient is fresh. That's our goal. That's the most important thing. I think the people recognize this.
Absolutely, I can vouch for that. I love that you offer different types of sauces for the pasta, so people can choose the type of pasta they want. The sauce, they could have a pomodoro, which is just plain tomato, and then they also have...
Yeah, there is the arrabbiata, is a tomato, garlic, and chili. We use the fresh bonnet chili. Even in this case, it's fresh chili, it's not crushed chili.
Oh, very nice.
So it's the taste is totally different from the crushed chili. And the arrabbiata sauce is very, very, is hot and is very tasty. If you see on our menu, we have ragù bolognese. A lot of people make bolognese in Cambridge. But I'm not sure that a lot of people cook the bolognese for 5 hours.
Yeah, that's the proper way.
We cook it in the proper Italian way.
Yeah.
5 hours at least of cooking. And obviously, it means that the tomato is well cooked, the meat is cooked, and the flavor is fantastic.
It
the
is.
Carbonara, we have to do not the proper Italian carbonara. If our customer asks for Italian carbonara, we do Italian carbonara.
Which is just eggs.
Eggs, parmesan, and guanciale.
No
that
cream.
Is cheek, no cream, no cream. But the English people love cream in the carbonara, so we do the Italian-English carbonara. That is good, but it's, you know, you can choose between the proper carbonara Italian style or English style.
It's good that you can offer both options for the Italians or the ones that are used to having...
And, you know, it's quite funny when the people ask for proper carbonara, I show them how I cook it. I crush the egg for them, I whisk the egg with the parmesan just in front of them. In my opinion, this is the most important thing. That you have to show how you cook the food for the customer.
Do you have other types of quattro formaggi,
pesto alla genovese? Yeah, we have quattro formaggi and pesto alla genovese. For the pesto alla genovese, it's my favorite probably, because you use nuts and fresh basil, and the fresh basil is fantastic. You can smell all restaurants, you can smell the basil flavor.
Do you use pine nuts?
I try to have a mix of pine nuts, cashew nuts, hazelnuts, all nuts that are quite sweet. because the pesto alla genovese needs something quite sweet.
Oh, it sounds good. I think I have to try that next time.
Yeah, yeah, you have to try. And there is a lot of parmesan inside, so, you know, it's very, very good.
And one of the things to note is that you do offer a gluten-free option for the pasta, which is really good for some people who have dietary requirements or preferences.
Yeah, you know, I saw that one of my children was celiac. In that period, I had attended some courses for a gluten-free pizza, gluten-free pasta, gluten-free sauces. In this case, I decided to put my knowledge here in this restaurant. That's why we do the proper gluten-free pasta. All our sauces are made with gluten-free ingredient, and there is no cross-contamination. That's important because sometimes the people who ask for gluten-free pasta suffer from some celiac disease or other intolerance or allergies.
You have a lot of pizzas that you offer. Sometimes you have specials. I know I'm a big fan of the truffle pizza, and I've been you get them seasonally, so it's really something that people have to ask for.
Yeah, the truffle is something difficult to find, even in Italy. I come from Viterbo, so Viterbo is in the center of Italy. All truffle came from the center of Italy.
So what region is Viterbo in?
Viterbo is Lazio.
Lazio. That's where my father's side of the family is from.
We're
almost paisan.
The truffle is very good, it's very expensive, but we decide to sell it for very, very little amount of money. Because you can eat truffle pizza for £15. 1 kilo of truffle costs £300. We sell it as we buy it, you know. I do as an advertisement.
Yeah, and word of mouth gets around when you have something special like that.
Exactly. I think that the word of mouth is the best advertisement you can
make. Yeah. So you make your own pizza dough as well then?
Yeah, absolutely. In Italy, you can't find vegan food easily. But here, I think that it's important to offer to the community what they expect from you.
Yeah. And pizza has so many options that you can put whatever you want on it and still make it taste good if you know what you're doing.
Exactly.
And you do have a vegan option as well, or, you know, you have an aubergine courgette, so not just mortadella or prosciutto.
No, exactly.
So there's always something.
The focaccia, obviously, is like pizza, but it's thicker than pizza and it's cut in the middle like a sandwich. In our menu, there is the vegan option of aubergine courgette, is Palermo focaccia. But the customer can fill the focaccia with every ingredient they chose.
Yeah, and I like that too, because you can always just come in and get one to go, and it's easy to eat if you can't stay and sit down, because the place is small and it fills up quickly.
Yeah.
So it's good you have takeaway options as well. People can just pop in and get something.
Yeah, the takeaway option is important. Yeah. And we started with the delivery as well.
Oh, that's good. You can come here and have a nice meal. You can bring your own bottle of wine. You have a corkage fee of £1, which is very reasonable. So if you organize it and you come on a quiet night, you can sit here with your family or your friends. You can order pizza, pasta, have some wine in little plastic cups, very rustic, you know? I love that.
Absolutely.
You know, and I see all kinds of people that come here, students, young families with their little kids.
Bring your own bottle. Another restaurateur told me, why you put just £1 per bottle?
That is
I charge £5 per bottle. You know, in my opinion, my business is food, it's not drink.
I think that's a reasonable price because you're not supplying, you know, fine glassware that you have to wash.
Exactly.
So your overheads are relatively low. So I think it works out. And so, you also have like little desserts as well. For people with a sweet tooth, you offer little.
Yeah. Now my chef told me that we have to sell more tiramisu.
Yeah.
But really, the people can eat tiramisu everywhere. We do Nutella kisses you can find them only here. Nutella kisses is Pavesini biscuit, an Italian biscuit, with Nutella, another biscuit with mascarpone cheese, joined together and wet in the coffee. Something that I have it and other restaurants not.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's what I try to do.
Yeah. I think it's worth coming in here because and asking what do you have today, because it's not only what you have directly on your menu. There's always a special, like last time I had gnocchi with like a cream sauce with truffle shavings and a bit of hazelnut, and I never had anything like that before, and I put a photo up and everybody came here to go, I came here to try it because
exactly. A lot of people asked me
I talked to someone who was Italian who said I saw that photo and I came to have it, so it's not always there, so it's always worth asking. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me, Andrea.
Thank you very much.
Grazie mille.
Grazie a voi.
Ciao. And you're listening to Flavor on Cambridge 105.
And that was Pina Broccoli-Anaya reporting from Tradizione on Mill Road, offering a real taste of Italia.
Yeah, it sounds good. Dave Fox from Trumpington Allotments isn't with us today, but his advice for this month is, assuming you've got everything done, like sowing your broad bean seeds or your onions and garlic, and covered bare soil with mulch or a green compost, have a rest. A bit unexpected, but there you go. Enjoy it. It can't last.
And while you're not doing anything in your vegetable garden or allotment, perhaps you could enjoy a glass or two of wine. Here's Dan Young from Noel Young Wines in Trumpington to suggest a couple. And if you've ever wondered what carbonic maceration is, this is your moment.
We've got a fantastic white from South Africa and a really interesting red from Chile. The white is a Chenin Blanc, definitely one of South Africa's strongest grape varieties. There's some amazing old vineyards that are being discovered, fruits in tremendous condition, lots of complexity. This particular one is picked quite late, so the fruit's quite ripe, then spends a bit of time going through barrel fermentation and then into French oak. So there's two distinct styles you can have with Chenin. One is the more crisp tank fermented style, so that's more fresh and zingy, and then you've got this style, which is really more of a nod perhaps towards white Burgundy, so a bit more sort of nutty, a little bit of creamy sort of slightly spicy toasty oak comes through. But the real key for the white there is having that that lovely acidity, so that's what keeps the balance. Very, very food versatile as well, going from perhaps a simple really good roast chicken, organic chicken, all the way through to even some curry. Can work well there as well. So that's the tremendous white.
You say they're from old vines.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of very good material, as we would call it, over there. Previously, the fruit would have been just harvested and gone into cooperative wines, you know, perhaps made by someone like KWV, although they don't really exist in the same way anymore. But so the fruit had no identity. It was just brought in with fruit from all over the place, combined and then just churned out into fairly unattractive, stroke boring wines. But they've now discovered these vineyards are being separated out. These are probably something in the region of 60 to 80 year old vines. So
yields would be low and flavour would be high.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to explain, a really young vine will be very vigorous, produce a lot of leaf, but also a lot of fruit. And if you can imagine that all the energy that vine pulls out of the soil, but then has to distribute that amongst, say, 20 bunches, that's going to become quite dilute. Whereas with the older vines, and the trunks get thicker, they make them much more resistant to poor vintages because the roots are a lot lower down in the ground, so they get access to the water table much easier. Also, those long roots bring up a lot more of the minerals as the water goes down. It has a lot longer to go up into the vine. But then those vines may only produce 4 bunches of fruit. So will mean you get sort of maybe 4 or 5 times as much flavour per grape. So it's quite an important thing.
Yes.
It's finding the balance. You know, a really old vine, the output probably isn't enough to justify it. So that's where we have the old.
Right. And so what's the wine called again?
So it's Perdeburg Winery, and it's the Dryland Collection 2014 Chenin Blanc.
Right. And how much is that?
£12.39.
OK. And you've got a red?
Yeah, absolutely. It's brand new to us again, from Calitera. It's their DSTNTO, which is a bit of a mouthful. Don't ask me what it stands for because I can't remember. it's a blend predominantly Malbec, 52%, and then with a decent whack of Petit Verdot, which is quite unusual, and then a splash of Carmenere at the end. The Carmenere there really serving as the backbone to the wine, adding the structure. Quite a deep colour, quite vibrant, bright fruit, quite crunchy, has a little bit of a bit of the fruit, so it goes through carbonic maceration.
And carbonic maceration?
Yeah, so this you can find what the good winemakers will use this practice, whereby the fruit will come in from harvest, and then instead of it going into a crusher, a portion will go into a separate tank, and the fruit will naturally crush itself.
The weight of the fruit
exactly,
on top.
Exactly, yeah. So down at the bottom, the ones that are under the most weight, they will burst and they will start to naturally ferment. And it's a very gentle method. You get quite a soft style of fermentation, but you're not really squeezing any tannins out of the grape skin, so it's just a fruit. And it can be a little bit simple, so it would be unusual to make a wine entirely under that method, but it's a lovely way of adding a certain vibrancy and a little sort of creamy softness to a wine, which makes it quite charming and maybe a little bit more approachable when it's younger. So it's a clever little technique, but very much a style that we like. You can even pop this in the fridge for 10 or 15 minutes. Perhaps don't need to at this time of year, but then again, you know, your central heating might be cranked up, so that can make the red a little bit warm. But very much about the purity and freshness of the fruit. So that sort of red berries, a little bit of spice, a bit of pepper. Again, great with food, but really good as well, to be honest, just as a nice sort of drinking red of an evening.
Any particular food that it's going to accompany well?
I would say, again, you could do with some of the more Mediterranean styles would work quite well. If you've got a good sort of bolognese, that would be very nice indeed. Probably most pasta dishes actually would work quite well, because there is a little bit of acidity. Again, roast chicken, if you wanted to have a red with that, would be lovely. And maybe slightly unusual, but again, really good with something like a pan roast salmon as well. You know, if you want, some people do want to have a red with that, and I think that, which is fine.
So it's not too sort of domineering.
No, exactly. Not too big, not too powerful, not like a Shiraz or a Zinfandel. So it's it's a very sort of smooth style.
Right. Yeah. And what's the price like for that one?
And that, I think, is the same, $12.49.
Yeah.
That's the Calitera, and it's the DSTNTO 2014.
And that's from Chile.
That's from Chile, absolutely.
Great. Okay. Thanks very much.
No problem. Thank you.
That was Dan Young from Noel Young Wines. News about Noel Young's special events in a few moments' time in our news section, which is coming up right now.
And first, the university news, which is compiled by Gigi Perry. Now, she can't be with us today, but she will be back next time. Tomorrow night, Cambridge University's Blind Wine Tasting Society is holding an evening dedicated purely to sweet wines, and that's presented by Stefan Kuppen. They have an incredibly diverse array of styles, some very unlikely and unusual ones, so it will be a night of discovery. Tasting takes place in Seminar Room 3 at Churchill College from 7 p.m. Tickets can be bought on their website. You'll need to bring your own tasting glasses, which you can buy from the Bridge Street branch of the Cambridge Wine Merchants.
And Cambridge University Wine Society is returning to Southern Rhone for their next tasting on Tuesday the 17th of November. Daniel Rollet and his team will be taking you through Chêne Bleu's wines, which are made in the Rhone tradition, but with a twist. This family-owned biodynamic vineyard sits on the foothills of the Dentelle de Montmirail in Provence. The combination of the estate's high altitude and unique soil give these innovative wines their twist. On Tuesday, Cambridge University Wine Society will be trying six of their wines, handpicked by Daniel Rollet, for the night. And it takes place at 9 p.m. in the upper hall of Peterhouse College. Tickets are on sale from their website. Prices are as follows: member, £11, student non-member, £16, and the rest of us, £20.
On to the city news now. Strangeways Road tea and steak and honour at the Sainsbury's roundabout for the new Christian Community Church's Christmas market. Providence Kitchen will be doing brunch at Thirsty and Chesterton Road tomorrow.
Steak and Honour have a residency at Novi in Regent Street. They're there from Wednesdays to Saturdays until the end of January. You can book a table by phoning 518 537.
And just down the road in Regent Street, Seafood Shake will be opening soon. It's an oriental place. It's one to keep an eye on, we think.
Chef Ben Pope is back in Cambridge. He earned a lot of plaudits when he was at the Punter, and then he moved to the Pint Shop for a while before moving away, but now he is back in Cambridge and working at the Plough in Coton, and that's very good news.
The new Aromi in Fitzroy Street will be opening in the week of the 23rd of November.
And at the Pint Shop in Pease Hill on the 26th of November, flavour contributor Andrew Webb will be hosting a USA versus UK Thanksgiving night. There'll be foods from the UK and their American alternatives. Prawn cocktail versus American hush puppies, for example. Ribeye and flat iron steaks, UK and American style. Chips versus fries. Pumpkin pie versus figgy pudding. The price is £50, and that includes a flight of beers. So if it sounds like fun, you can book with payments in advance on Cambridge 352 293. That's at 7 p.m. on the 26th of November.
Also on the 26th of November at Rhode Island in High Street, Cherry Hinton, Providence Kitchen is doing a four-course Thanksgiving menu for £25, full of interesting dishes.
Noel Young Wines has some tastings coming up before Christmas. The first is on Thursday from 6 till 9:30pm. It costs £15, or four for £50 if you want to go as a group. And there are over 100 wines to try, including sparkling and champagne. Suppliers will be there to provide knowledgeable advice, and the price of admission includes food from none other than Provenance Kitchen. It takes place at Anstey Hall in Marriage Lane, Trumpington, and you can book by phoning 566 744.
Noel Young Wines also has a free in-store tasting at their shop in Trumpington. That's 52 High Street. It's in 2 weeks' time, and you can try their 2015 top picks of wines for under £20.
The Cambridge Food Assembly is planning to open its evening food market at Espresso Library in East Road in December. And also happening in December, we have, of course, the Mill Road Winter Fair. That will be on Saturday the 5th. And a new one, Chesterton Road Winter Fair. That will be on the 6th. They'll have their Christmas lights switch on at that time. And you can follow us on Twitter for more updates like these and others of Cambridge food and drink news. Of course, we are at Flavour 105.
And finally, the dates of next year's Eat Cambridge Food and Drink Festival have been announced. It will take place from the 7th to the 22nd of May, and the big event, where the suppliers all come together in a giant food fair, will be on the first day, Saturday the 7th of May.
And unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. Thanks to all of our interviewees, and we will be back in 2 weeks' time on the 28th of November. You can listen to this edition again tomorrow at 7 a.m. and on our podcast from early next week.
Coming up on Cambridge 105 this afternoon, Bookmark studio guest is crime writer Susan Grossi. Susan's Regency period novels have financial skullduggery at their heart. Also, Nicola Upson, who'll be talking about her latest novel, London Rain, and how the inspiration for it came from an old copy of the Radio Times. And children's author and illustrator Ellis Dolan will be there too. At 2 p.m, Ibrahim Rahman, Jack Langley, Tim Ebanks and Jack Swindlehurst bring you the latest sports news from across Cambridge and around the country. And at 6, it's Jason Allen with his mix of mostly 80s and 90s music.
And that's all for today. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Flavour105 and email us flavour@cambridge105.fm. So, until next time,
bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.